Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. Camille Olson on behalf of the appellants. I'd like to, first of all, just raise a procedural issue which has come up in November in connection with this case so that the Court is aware of it. I don't believe it substantively affects the appeal here, but I want to make sure that the Court is aware of it. Earlier this month, the Circuit Court, on appellant's motion, dismissed the tortious interference counts against the individual investigator defendants, Liapis, Foster, and Sprada, with allowing the plaintiff the right to reinstate those up until November 30th. The tortious interference claim, which was added to the second amended complaint, along with the fourth individual defendant, appellant Kelly, is not dismissed and remains in the case, and it's unclear as to whether or not the plaintiff will replead the tortious interference counts against the other three individual appellants.
So thank you for that. I have two broad concerns about this case. One of the, and they both actually go in the direction that it is mystifying to me why this case belongs in federal court. The first is that, as I understand your theory, any time somebody files a state court lawsuit that you regard as harassing, there is some qualified immunity-like or double jeopardy-like right not to even proceed through the process. And I think that greatly overreads what the Supreme Court has said about removal in civil rights cases. If you look at the difference between the Peacock case and the Rachel case, the Court has never said that simply bringing a lawsuit in state court is enough. That would be a gaping exception and I think a travesty to federalism. And my other point deals with the 1981 theory that you have. But maybe you can take the first one.
Thank you, Judge Wood. That broad reading of the state of Georgia versus Rachel is not the reading and is not the position of the appellants in this case. This case is a situation in which the underlying action was the reporting of what an individual employee, appellant Kelly, believed to be a racially harassing and discriminatory conduct of a supervisor and officer of the company. It's that act, that opposition activity, that protected activity, which he engaged in, which resulted in an investigation, both with respect to his anonymous complaint and a second individual's anonymous complaint, which ultimately led to an investigation, which led to the termination of the appellee on the basis of the results of that investigation.
Right, but so you're moving over to my 1981 point, because if you look at the theory that the Supreme Court adopts in the Humphreys case, that's a situation where there's an employer, and employee number one is in a racially protected category and is being discriminated against. And employee number two complains about the discrimination of the fellow employee. And the Supreme Court says that kind of configuration is enough to hold the employer liable under 1981. Now, we don't have anything like that. We have a fellow employee, Kelly, McGurr, you know, these various other people. And I am not familiar with any 1981 case that covers your situation. So you'd have to expand it that way. And 1981, of course, doesn't cover, there needs to be some federal interest. There needs to be perhaps a link to interstate commerce, something. The second problem is that you have, well, you're trying to expand into a negligence-based theory. Your notion of this, every time one disgruntled employee files a lawsuit against another, as far as you're concerned, for some sort of civil rights-related complaint, as far as you're concerned, there's removability into the federal court, and I just can't see that.
That is not the broad reading of the State of Georgia versus Rachel that the appellants are
But I don't see where
here.
Your limiting principle is. You have not in any of your briefs yet convinced me that there is any principle that limits your theory to this case.
The limiting principle here is that the underlying action that was engaged in, and let's just take one of the appellants, Appellant Kelly, is unquestionably, he was deposed, and during his deposition, he admitted that he was the author of one of the anonymous letters
right.
that detailed allegations of harassment and discrimination.
And if Continental Casualty had fired him for that or had in some way disciplined him, we would have a Humphreys situation. But it didn't. It actually believes what he says and fires McGurr.
Correct.
So we don't have Humphreys.
What we do have here is an officer, a former officer of the company and supervisor, and individuals can be sued under Section 1981, and there's no question under CBOCS West Inc. versus Humphreys that protected activity includes opposition to retaliation.
Right, but he is not hurt by the opposition, by the company. The fellow employee files a lawsuit against him, and I will say parenthetically, I see no reason why the Circuit Court of Cook County isn't entirely competent to adjudicate this lawsuit. There's concurrent jurisdiction over every civil rights act in the state and the federal courts. We miss one of the criteria of 1443-1, which is the state courts are cannot enforce the law providing for the equal civil. That doesn't seem to be present either.
Here the difference is, as an officer and supervisor of CNA at the time of the unlawful conduct, Ms. McGurr is a person who can be sued under Section 1981. But in any event...
But the fact is, so there's this lawsuit that she brings in state court. It's a lawsuit. It's going to be adjudicated in state court or it's going to be adjudicated in federal court. This is not a situation where to remove it to federal court is to erase it, which was the case in some of those criminal removals in the mid-1960s under the Civil Rights Act.
Respectfully, I disagree with Your Honor.
Oh, I
if don't under,
think you should.
Under State of Georgia versus Rachel, if in fact the district court were to determine that the reason for adding and suing, for example, Appellant Kelly, was because he had engaged in protected activity.
That's a federal defense. That's not enough either, because that's a federal defense that my activity was protected under 1981, and therefore I shouldn't be required. So it's essentially a malicious prosecution counterclaim.
But, Your Honor, it's also a basis for removal where under State of Georgia versus Rachel and other cases, including Supparelli and the other cases that we cited at page 20 of our opening brief, the courts have held that the mere prosecution of an action against an individual who, for exercising a protected civil rights, is in and of itself
where there's state action. In what sense is the bringing of a private tort action a violation of somebody else's civil rights?
It is being...
Especially under these circumstances where it's a dispute among coworkers and not a dispute between an employee and his or her employer for adverse employment action. Which would bring you within the Humphreys case.
Right. In this situation, again, McGurr was an officer of the company, was
right.
a supervisor.
She didn't take any adverse employment action against any of her coworkers here. She was the subject of an adverse employment action.
That's correct,
based
Your
on
Honor.
This complaint of racial harassment. So she sues for defamation and other torts, and you're trying to make the claim that the mere existence of the lawsuit works a deprivation of your client's civil rights?
And that's
I just
exactly,
don't see it.
That's exactly
crazy.
What the Supreme Court said.
Suppose that they were lying. I mean, you know, you're assuming the merits of the defamation case. I think Judge Sykes is right. You know, this is a private tort action.
Under State of Georgia versus Rachel, the court said, very similar to the arguments and the analysis that's being presented here today, In that case, Georgia claimed that one of the cases does not cover a situation of sit-ins prosecuted for disorderly conduct or other unlawful
acts.
Because
the Civil Rights Act had brought that precise conduct under federal protection.
And here, Section 1981 brings a retaliatory act, and here
but
the retaliatory
but it's
act...
A, that's where I'm saying it's a defense. You don't know. We don't know sitting here whether it was a retaliatory act, whether it was just mean-spirited defamation of this woman, what it was. I mean, out there in the world, somebody may know that. The courts don't know that at the moment the complaint is filed.
So
you're saying that the law of defamation has been repealed.
I'm not saying that the law of defamation.
Yes, you are.
No, if you exactly as the Supreme Court said in State of Georgia versus Becker, one of the functions of the hearing on the allegations of the removal petition will be to determine whether the defendants were ejected on racial grounds or for some other valid reason. But the fact of the matter is, allowing that state court case to continue in the event that it is established that the removal of the appellants from the various places of public accommodation was done for racial reasons, then under the authority of other cases, the duty of the district court would be to dismiss the prosecutions. If not, the state court cases will continue. But you
these
have
are
to
prosecutions.
Take
I mean, it's just so different from a private tort case.
But, in fact, what's happening here is Ms. McGurr is prosecuting
She's a private plaintiff who's filed a lawsuit. If your defenses are correct, then the circuit court will find that truth is a defense to defamation, and her cases will be found to be without merit.
And it's the appellant's position in this case that, in fact, the mere pendency of that action, and as the court said in State of Georgia versus Rachel, requiring the individual defendants to labor under the defense of that case in and of itself is a retaliatory action.
That's because they had a federal civil right to access the premises that they were alleged to have trespassed against.
And here they had
by virtue of the civil rights law. Here they don't. You're arguing that your clients had a federal civil right to defame the plaintiff.
No,
tortiously
you have
interfere
to take
with
the allegations of the petition for removal is true in this situation. And the allegation of the petition for removal is that, in fact, the individual defendant, Kelly, as well as another individual, as well as individuals who were interviewed in connection with the investigation, all raised to their employer an issue of allegations
right,
of racial discrimination.
And they were not retaliated against by their employer. They were, in fact, their allegations were adjudicated in their favor by the employer, and the offending party was fired. And so they have not been retaliated against in violation of Section 1981 in the sense understood by the Humphreys case.
Which, remembering that 1981 is about contracts with your employer. 1981 is not some freestanding don't do bad things to other people law.
Correct. But in this situation, the appellee here, McGurr, was a supervisor, was an officer, and
she's not acting in that capacity when she filed the lawsuit. That's the material
That's
point here.
That's correct. Yeah. I see my time. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Steve Rosenberg, and I represent Mary Lou McGurr, plaintiff below. It is troubling that the position taken by the appellant has no limiting factor whatsoever. And following that path, I believe it is equally troubling that we have a notice of removal filed about 13 months after the tort case has been filed in the Circuit Court of Cook County.
But there's been discussion over the years about whether the addition of a new defendant
right.
who certainly hasn't been represented by the other defendants
right.
makes a difference, since it's cases that are removed, not individual claims. And Congress has recently expressed a preference for the last served rule. So if we date this from the time that Mr. Kelly was served, then this is perfectly in time.
Yes, that's
and
right.
And so if we don't, then we somehow deprive him of his right to test the waters with the removal.
Well, there are a couple of things to say in that regard. First of all, the Circuit Court of Cook County is perfectly able to adjudicate
that's
his
not,
claims.
And it is every time there's a removal possibility, or at least that's our starting presumption. But if you can remove, I mean, I thought you were just making a timeliness claim, and I'm saying that if you go with the idea that it has to be a case and you file the last served rule, then at least from a timeliness point of view, maybe not merits, maybe, you know, that's a different issue. This was removable because of the addition of Mr. Kelly. I don't think adding, by the way, if to the extent it matters, I don't think adding the tortious interference theory did anything, but we did add Mr. Kelly as a defendant.
We did add Mr. Kelly, and I suppose in a wildly inefficient setting, Mr. Kelly could get his trial in this building, and everyone else could go to trial
in
the
Denny's. Well, you would have to ask the district court to remand the other three cases. That's why I say in the structure of removal is something that removes entire cases precisely to avoid the kind of inefficiency you're talking about.
Yes.
So the case itself was removed once Mr. Kelly, a new person never involved before, comes in, and I think that lands the issue here. Now, our problem with this case is that we can sit around and read Peacock, and we can read Rachel, and we can read Johnson, and we can read all of these things, but the Supreme Court has not been as clear as it might have been about when the civil rights interests do authorize this type of removal and when they do not.
To the extent that you're asking me, I agree. It hasn't been clear, and I've read these cases over and over again. And to me, the clearest point that's made is actually made in Johnson versus Mississippi, where they talk about the right that is allegedly denied arises under a federal law providing for specific civil rights, stated in terms of racial equality, not rights of general applicability. And when you look at what CNA is talking about, they're talking about something that's really very, very murky, because they're talking about something called retaliation for opposing racial discrimination.
Well, that's clear enough in the Humphreys setting, where, you know, and if Kelly and his other fellow complainers had been disciplined by the company for raising a fuss,
yes,
then we would have, you know, a Humphreys
right. We don't
sort
have
of
Humphreys
situation.
Here.
We
right.
certainly don't here,
right.
And so one of our issues is whether that makes a difference or not.
Right. And the second point, which I think Judge St. Eve focused upon correctly, in my view, was that the argument was never addressed that the Circuit Court of Cook County could not judge these claims. And she really went past rather quickly the first requirement of Rachel and the other cases and went to the second one. And I believe she referred to the language in Peacock, which says that we shouldn't be sitting in judgment on our state court brethren. So I think based on the two-pronged test, as specifically as you can distill it from the cases, A, there is no deprived right specifically tied to something like voting rights or housing or a prosecution, as you pointed out, a prosecution for trespass. There's nothing specific here. There is just this murky thing going on about retaliation, and while it may have some application in a Humphrey setting, this isn't Humphrey's. And secondly, this issue about the Circuit Court of Cook County not being able to handle this case. And I want to mention something else, which is deeply troubling to me. After the case was remanded by Judge St. Eve, CNA and its co-defendants went and filed an original action, which ended up in front of Judge Gettleman on the same issue.
Well,
same issue.
courts deal with parallel litigation from time to time, as I'm sure you know, and that really doesn't pose the same questions as this removal issue does.
Yes.
I think.
I understand.
So.
And based on what her opinions were, and I think they were well reasoned, I believe that Judge St. Eve's decision should be affirmed.
Okay.
Said that, unless there are other questions.
I don't believe so. Thank you.
Not for me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honor, just a couple of points. I know that my time is up. It is the appellant's position that Section 1981 does prohibit retaliation, which includes the activity that was engaged in by Marilyn McGurr here in terms of the prosecution of the state court action, if it was in retaliation for opposing discrimination.
Do you understand the consequences of that argument, counsel? That would make the filing of a state tort lawsuit where there is some underlying racial conduct,
yes,
a civil rights violation.
It would.
That's an extraordinary argument.
It does not make it a civil rights violation. It allows that case to be removed to federal court.
Right, you've got to have a cognizable right under Section 1981. I just don't see it in this context. And your argument that there exists one in this context is, as I said, quite extraordinary, because it essentially is an argument that a private tort plaintiff commits a civil rights violation by the very act of filing the tort suit in state court, to the extent that there's some underlying racial component to the course of conduct that's sued on. That's just an extraordinary proposition.
The proposition is, if they're doing so to retaliate against an individual for exercising their rights under Section 1981,
no,
that's the argument that's being raised. And that is a much narrower basis than the general proposition that anyone who files a state court defamation or tort action in and of itself would have their claim extinguished. It's not the issue of the extinguishing of the claim. It's the issue as to whether the federal court, in the first instance, whether the defendant has the right to have the federal court hear that claim, and if, in fact, there needs to be a hearing, that's what is provided for, as described by the Supreme Court in the state of Georgia versus Rachel. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.